Welcome to Revolutionize Your Retirement Radio, bringing you insights and strategies to help you create a magnificent and fulfilling second half of life. Here's your host, certified professional retirement coach and best-selling author, Dr. Dorian Mincer.
I want to welcome everybody today to the Revolutionize Your Retirement Interview with Experts series. These are interviews to help you create a fulfilling second half of life. I'm Dori Mincer, the founder and facilitator of these calls, and I'm delighted that you're all with us. I am just totally delighted to have Carrie Hannon be with us. And just to tell you a little about Carrie, for those of you who don't, she's a recognized authority on career and workplace issues. And she really has done a lot of work on trying to help people think about making a living and making a difference. She's best-selling author, and she's based in Washington, D.C. And her book, Great Jobs for Everyone 50-plus, Finding Work That Keeps You Happy and Healthy and Pays the Bills, came out in 2012, and it's a national bestseller. And her updated paperback version of her award-winning book, What's Next? Finding Your Passion and Your Dream Job in Your 40s, 50s, and Beyond, is now available. Carrie has spent more than 25 years covering all aspects of personal finance for the nation's leading media companies, including the New York Times, Forbes, Money, USA News and World Report, USA Today, and the Wall Street Journal. She's a nationally recognized authority on boomer career transitions and retirement. She's ARP's job expert and is the Great Jobs columnist for ARP.org, as well as a contributing editor at Forbes magazine and the Second Verse columnist for Forbes.com. She's recognized as the Forbes Bard of career transitions and working retirement issues. She's also writes for the PBS website nextavenue.org. She's an expert on career and personal finance for boomer women and writes a weekly column as well as a MetLife Foundation and New America Media Fellow on Aging. She's appeared as a financial expert on the NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams, the ABC News, CBS, Fox, CNBC, CNN, and PBS, and a guest on numerous radio programs. And I am delighted that she's here today with our Revolutionize Your Retirement interview series with me. Carrie, welcome.
Thank you, Dori. It's a thrill to be here.
Thank you.
I'm exhausted listening to the intro, though.
You have such an impressive background, and I know that you've done redeploying of yourself, so we'll get into those terms, so you'll be able to talk about that. Tell us a little right on how you got involved in all of this wonderful work that you've been doing for a while now.
Thanks. It's been a really nice journey for me. I have been, through the early part of my career, a financial journalist and doing a lot of work with personal finance and that sort of thing, and news you can use, really journalism work that really made a difference in people's lives, that had a takeaway. And I had the opportunity when I went off to start my own media company and be an entrepreneurial, U.S. News and World Report, who had been one of my previous employers, called me and said, hey, would you like to do a column on people who change careers, people who make a sweeping change in their careers, usually boomers? And I said, yeah, that sounds great, because I absolutely love telling people stories. I'm fascinated by what people do with their lives that make them meaningful and exciting and so forth. And I embarked on this process for about 3 years. U.S. News gave me the opportunity to travel around the country and meet people who had made big life changes. And that was about maybe 7 years ago or so. I started 7, 8 years ago doing this meeting people and finding out what sort of spurred them to make these changes. And the path just kept widening, and I kept meeting and finding fascinating stories of people doing these things. And then I discovered there were a lot of reasons why people were changing to new careers, because the recession certainly hit people hard. And in fact, the jobs they had been doing no longer existed, or they were downsized way before they were ready to retire. And that led me to doing the column for AARP. They had taken notice of my book, What's Next, when it came out. And they said, hey, would you do this Great Jobs for Retirees, for people who are need to stay in the job market? I found this whole other audience of people over 50 who not necessarily had to make huge career changes, which the folks I profile in What's Next do. make pretty big career changes. But people who just want to stay in the workforce over 50, and there's this palpable fear and hunger to find work at this age, this whole demographic opened up to me, and it's been fantastic, and I've enjoyed meeting all the people along the way.
That's great to hear, and you do such a beautiful job, and hopefully during the course of this time that you're speaking with us, you'll tell some of the stories, because there's some wonderful ones that I know I've read from both your book as well as from some of the writings and the blogs that you've done. Since you mentioned opening up to people 50 and over, let's just start with, what are the biggest challenges for somebody trying to find a job who's over 50?
It's a story that we all know this, everyone on the call probably feels it in their stomach if you're in this age group, is that ageism is alive and well in the workplace. And there's lots of things to say. Things are changing and companies are trying harder and ageism is in fact not legal and that sort of thing. But frankly, employers are reluctant to hire people over 50 and maybe sometimes in their 40s for a variety of reasons. And the biggest issues out there are A, they think that you don't have the stamina and you're not really up for the job. They think that B, maybe you're just using the job as a placeholder until you actually get to retirement age or what you perceive to be your retirement age, and you're not really in it for the long haul. They think that you're not up for the technology aspect of it. You're behind the curve. You're not really nimble when it comes to technology. And another reason, that you're not going to work well with younger people, that you're set in your ways. This is the way things have been done, and you might not have that ability to work with a younger employee who may actually end up being your boss. Those are just a few reasons. There are plenty of others, but those are some of the big hitters, and each of those we can tackle.
Can you maybe elaborate a little on what would be some ways to kind of tackle and overcome some of them?
Yeah, I think the first one that I mentioned, that you don't have the stamina or you're not up for the job. The thing is, I have so many people who come to for work that say, hey, should I, especially women, should I dye my hair? Should I do Botox? What's the deal? And frankly, I always say, no, of course, if that's what you want to do, feel free to. But by all means, the most important thing is to get physically fit. And if you have some sort of vibrancy in a fitness program, will lead you to feeling stronger, healthier, energetic, and that shows through to an employer that, in fact, you do have this ability to have the energy for the job. And it also gives off, when you're physically fit, and I don't mean running fast miles or pressing weights and so forth, but just a nice, healthy diet and living and you're working out, you bring a certain positive energy comes off of you that I think employers pick up on. That's important. Technology is huge, and you can't, it's just non-negotiable. There's so many ways today to get up to speed with technology by taking courses at community colleges, reaching back to the young people who surround you. I can talk to my nephews and nieces at will, and they're patient with me. Reach back and ask for help, but you've got to do it. Those are just two areas that right there you can tackle.
That's excellent. And I really do, the fact that you stress taking care of yourself and that fitness, because I think the energy, some people grow older and feel old, and we're not. Some are older than others, but there's a vitality. My husband's 13 years older than me, and I have just this new appreciation of how you can age with vitality. But I see so many examples where some people are just act older, and others just are so vital, no matter what their chronological age. So it's really so important. I just want to ask a little about your notions about retirement and all. I know you were quoted on NPR as saying we should retire the word retire, and I really agree with you, but can you elaborate on that?
I've jokingly, when I give talks, I'll say, oh, maybe it should be refire, and everyone's, no, don't use the word fire. It's really about re-engagement, and I honestly, all of the folks in today's world, and again, I'm preaching to the choir here with the audience here probably listening in, we're living longer, healthier lives, and most people do want to stay active and doing something with their talents, their skills, intellectually, so we don't just go hammock sitting and swinging. But it's really that we want to stay part of the world for many reasons, and I often talk about the financial reasons for staying involved. but there are also certainly the mental engagement. We stay healthier. The studies have shown that people who have a place to go to in the mornings, or maybe it doesn't have to be every morning, but they have somewhere, they're accountable. They're relevant. There is a reason to be moving forward with your life. And I think that makes the retirement situation really an old term. It's passé today. If you retire at 60 or 65, you've got another 10, 15, maybe even 20 years that you're something to contribute. And I write about it, but certainly Marcy Albaher and the Encore.org group is very focused on this is a time in life where many people have that opportunity to say, hey, is this what life's all about? What can I do with my skills to make it a better place?
You use the term, and I know Marcy does too, of Encore Career. Maybe because I don't know all the people who are on the call, and some people, it may be preaching to the choir, but it may not be. So Could you do a little definition of what is an Encore Career, and maybe just explain that so we're all on the same page as you give some examples of it?
Yeah, for me, and I think the folks at Encore go along with the way I define it, and they may be a little more specific, but I look to an Encore Career as one where you are making a turn to find work that has meaning to you, but also has a purpose for the greater world. It's something that you can contribute to move the ball forward and help others and contribute to our world. And some of those kind of jobs do not necessarily provide a paycheck, and they may not always provide the paycheck that if they do provide a paycheck that you're working with the nonprofit world, perhaps it might not be what you had grown accustomed to in your previous working world. It doesn't always fit that definition. A second career is often someone who has embarked on truly making a turn, but more often than not, it's working in the for-profit world and in the corporate world, and it's more of a focus on that than on a nonprofit. So that's how I see the delineation. And in the question period, people can challenge me on that or they can give their own definitions. But I think that's how I see the line. There's some great stories about an Encore Career. For example, there's a woman I profile in my book, Ann Nolan, who she had worked in corporate America. And when she was downsized from her job, she didn't know what the heck she was going to do. She would walk along the river. She had a little package, so she had some time to think about it with her dog along the river in Providence, Rhode Island, figuring out what she might want to do. And she ended up going to work she stopped in at the homeless shelter there in Providence, and they recognized her abilities from the corporate world and asked her if she might want to be part of their board. And next thing, Anne, the executive director there had moved on to another job, and Anne was tapped to be the head of the largest homeless shelter in Rhode Island. And she said, my goodness, I never would have imagined that's where my career was going to go. But what an Encore Career. She certainly doesn't make what she made in the corporate world. But she said, Carrie, I cry every day, and I cry for the right reasons. And that's because she's making a difference in so many people's lives.
That's a lovely story. Is it mostly, from your experience, people moving into the nonprofit world, or do sometimes people, I guess your differentiation is that sort of the second careers are maybe in the more profit world and the
That's where I'm drawing the line.
Okay.
I see more social purpose in that definition, but that word, and the folks at Encore work really hard to establish that word as meaningful to society and that sort of thing. But the word across the board is used fairly loosely by people saying they use the word Encore as just meaning a second career. That's just where I draw the line, but I think you have to, some people will use it just to mean a second career. And a second career, they're fun. There are just some wonderful ones out there. And there's a guy I profile in What's Next, too. He was an investment banker at Merrill Lynch, and he just, when all the 9/11 stuff went down and so forth, he realized that he didn't want to raise his family in the New York area. He was never even getting to see his kids play ball or what have you. And he grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and he and his wife fancied themselves gourmet chefs of some sort. They had a gourmet cooking club they belonged to or something. But Tim got it in his mind that, hey, I want to open an Italian restaurant. But he went back to his hometown of Pittsburgh where the living, one of the tips I have in the book is if you're going to do these second careers and so forth, you need to find ways to downsize, and we can talk more about that. But he was able to move back to Pittsburgh, where the cost of living was far less expensive than in the New York area. But Tim didn't just start off with a restaurant. He worked at every red sauce joint he could find in the Pittsburgh area. He bussed tables. He learned to saute. He worked back in the kitchen. He did every job. And then he finally said, I think I can do this. And he and his wife launched this restaurant. And here they are when I come back to this revised book of what's next. I stopped in to see them just a few weeks ago, and they're doing great. They just had their 10th anniversary. It's been a huge success because the whole family got involved in the restaurant. And so I see that as a second career versus an encore career.
Yeah, that's a great example of it, a second act kind of thing. And
exactly. Yeah.
What's your sense of what are the jobs now for people who do have a lot of experience? I imagine a lot of people on the call either themselves have a lot of experience or work with people who have a lot of experience. And I know that you often talk about jobs that ride the age wave. So that what are some of the key jobs that you're finding that are hot now and why?
I think if we look at just broad categories of jobs, undoubtedly healthcare is the sort of juggernaut there, and that's where we're seeing just tons of opportunity. But it's not just doctors and nurses and traditional medical services that you might think of, certainly caregivers and all that. There's lots of things. But every day, even within that field, so we're going to say healthcare is one. Another area I see growing is this one that is encore career, this nonprofit world. The nonprofits are hiring. And if you have skills, if you're an accountant or you're good with fundraising or HR, there's usually if you really have a mission that you're passionate about or a cause you care about, through networking and so forth, there are opportunities within the nonprofit world for people to use their skills from their prior career to move into this arena. And then other area I see a lot of growth is in small businesses. I think small businesses are the core of the American spirit and the spine of our business world. And there are more and more entrepreneurs. The Kaufman numbers come out all the time that this is one of the fastest demographics of small business. Startups are the older entrepreneur. So a lot of people who are in the job market today are saying maybe they're tired of the whole process of trying to get hired at over 50, but a lot of them are saying now is my time to start my own business, and they are, and many of them are very successful today because they're taking their time and making this work for them. But I'm going to skip back for just a second, if you'll bear with me, to talk about the riding the age wave and how that fits into, for example, healthcare. Every day there are jobs being created for people who are in their 50s and 60s to cater to or provide services to people in their 70s and their 80s as the population ages. They're jobs we may never have even thought about before. And again, it also can feed into an entrepreneurial spirit. But I see healthcare-related jobs coming up. If you have the stamina and you want to do this, massage therapist. And I think of my mom, who's 85. Mom's got like her own team. She's got a massage therapist. She's got a personal trainer, a senior who specializes in seniors doing fitness and workouts that are suitable for someone at her age at 85. She's got a driver because we took the keys away from her. So those are just three jobs. And she downsized from the house that she and Dad lived in when he passed away. And there was someone who was a move manager who was able to come in and look at her new place and figure out what fit, what didn't fit, what needed to be sold. And so these kind of jobs are bubbling up that people they're in many ways they're health related, or aging related. And so those are some of the ideas I encourage people to, I write about them, but I also think my ideas are just jumping off points for people to use their imagination about what might I be able to do with my skills in this growing market of seniors who need a variety of services. Patient advocate is another one of my favorites, which is in the healthcare field. And often these are ones you hang out your own shingle for, but some are within a corporation. You could find a job as a patient advocate with a hospital or what have you to help smooth the process for folks.
Those are great examples, and I think what you're really saying is it's important to think outside of the box and to be creative and brainstorm, like, what are some of the things you can do and where is there a need? Because that's where there will be hiring. Have you
One other thing, Dory, in that category that another job that just snapped my mind right now is financial planners, people who are skilled with understanding finances and those sort of issues. There's a real need for someone who can really, the Bureau of Labor Statistics say financial planners are one of the fastest growing job segments right now and moving forward for the next 8 or so years. My goodness, if it's an area that you're good at, to get a certification in financial planning, and if you have the desire, I highly recommend people go on and get the CFP certification as well. And that opens up a whole arena of clients who really need handholding because they need their money to last longer than they ever did before. They want advice in a different kind of way, a lifestyle advice, even more than just where should I invest my money. It's much different than that. It's how do I spend my money in retirement or as I age? How do I spend so I don't run out of money? There's this huge fear about living your money.
Excellent ideas. Have you discovered, or what are some of the key steps that would be helpful for people to be thinking about when they are beginning to plan or think about an encore or a second career? What approach do you suggest?
Yeah, I think you really need to do some soul searching initially. And again, I will say that in my book, What's Next, I profile the success stories for a reason, because not everyone, it's hard to make a career change. It's hard. These things don't come easily, and it takes, I profile these folks because I think we learn from people who succeed. And what I found with this group of people that I identified in this particular book is that the things that made them succeed is that it took 3 to 5 years to really make that career change. You need to start early. This is not something you can make a rash decision or move quickly. It often takes a suitable amount of time to lay the groundwork, go slowly. And it starts with that soul searching piece where you say, what is it I really want to do? And this is, not everyone has the luxury of this. I understand that if you've been downsized and you really need to get back in the workplace, maybe in that case, you find that job that's going to help you pay the bills and then sit back and say, what is it that I really want to do, and start your strategy. But if you can start early, the earlier you start, the better your chance of success is. In that spirit, what you do is you think about what it is. What are you really good at? A lot of people are fearful. They think, oh my gosh, I'm going to peel back the layers and I find I'm absolutely not passionate about anything. Or I'm not going to be good at what I'm passionate about. But usually people find things that it even goes back to their childhood that they enjoy doing. A woman I profiled recently in the New York Times, she retired, but she wanted to keep involved and keep working. And she spent some time thinking, and she realized as a young girl she loved to sew. That was the thing she really loved to do. And one thing led to another, and she started a business taking people's wedding dresses, their old wedding dresses, and turning them into pillows and christening dresses and using that material. And she's built this nice business in Kansas City doing this very thing, and it's tapping into something she loved as a kid. So we find that happens a lot. So you want to go slowly. You want to do your homework. You want to find out, is there a need for what it is I want to do out there? Is there a niche in the market that I could fit into? And that involves networking, truly reaching out and talking to people who are doing those jobs and finding out what it's all about, going to industry meetings and those sort of things, really getting involved, following companies or people on Twitter or LinkedIn that are doing something that you're interested in doing. Learn as much as you can. Often you need to go back and add skills. You need to go back and get a certification, like I mentioned, say someone who wants to do financial planning or a patient advocate. They're just starting to have certifications in that. But many of them, and again, you need to do your homework on those to make sure they're legit, the program, and people are getting hired out of them because there's a lot of them out there now. But do add the skills, and if you can add them first, and actually if you can add them while you're still working for your current employer, if they somehow can segue into the work you do there, and they might even be able to help you pay for it. But you want to add that education, and at the risk of babbling too much, the other big important piece is to do the job first. And what I mean by that is if you can go out and moonlight, volunteer, really get out and see, is this something I truly want to do? When I mentioned Tim in the Italian restaurant thing, he got down in the dirt there to figure out, is this something I'm really going to want to do? And there's a couple I profile in the book that had this romantic notion of becoming chocolatiers, and we all fantasize about stuff like that. But often in their case, and I'll explain in a second, but often people, when they do the job, they realize it's not as dreamy as they expected. In this case, they did find it just as dreamy, but they started in stages. They started by taking cooking classes while they were still involved in their current, in their jobs. She was a botany professor and he was a pediatrician. They did that for a while. Then they started making chocolates for friends. He volunteered at Dean and DeLuca making chocolates for free, just doing that, or and at a local restaurant doing that. And they just slowly built up their business, and now they've got a nice business where they even sell chocolates over the web with it from their site there. And but it was by going out and actually making chocolate that you can't know if it's going to work for you unless you actually do it.
Excellent point. And Elizabeth from Florida, who's part of the call now, said that she, from her experience, she sees that there's such a growing need for transportation everywhere, just thinking about the other example you gave for those aging in place. And she said that she knows somebody who started a taxi service for this particular niche audience who often have scheduled appointments and things. So the world is open for being creative in this way.
Absolutely love that idea. I'm glad Elizabeth came in with that one, because this transportation thing is huge. It's, we grapple, my mom's in Pittsburgh, and it's, we grapple with how to make it, and my brothers try to help, right. But it is important if they can, in the communities, there's a great one, any kind of services like they can help people get to where they need to go. And some communities around the country really have started to focus on this. If they're not doing it in your community, think of ways you can do that, because just because someone's not driving doesn't mean that they're not 100% with the program. It's just that the keys have been taken away from them for various other reasons, when they have to get to appointments or out to dinner with friends even, that sort of thing.
I think there's so many possibilities if you think about it, and thinking about how the longevity revolution kind of plays into it, that we're all getting older, and those of us still younger now can help those older, and then those coming along can help us as we get older.
And when with this aging in place, that home modification pro, if someone's interested in carpentry, or they're an architect, or they're an interior designer, there's all kinds of ways. The Building Home Builders Association has a certificate in this. Ways that you can go into someone's home and make it safer for them to age in place. What are some, and that's a growing field, and it's, there are lots of ways to get at that, but, and if you're not someone who can actually, a builder who can do that construction and be bonded to do it and have the insurance to do it, you can still be an interior designer who pairs up with somebody who can do the physical work. So I think that's a really important one of aging in place. When you said that, Dori, that got me thinking. There's down that road, there's lots of things in the aging in place, even grocery shopping. We're seeing more of that, but I think you could start that sort of thing.
That personal helper kind of role.
Yeah, personal helper, personal assistant, absolutely.
Back to one of the points you made earlier, Janet from Indianapolis had a question. What if people are finding themselves working in a situation where they're older and everybody's younger? You had mentioned that's one of the kind of obstacles sometimes, or one of the issues that employers may say, oh, you're not going to work well with younger people. She wondered, how do you overcome that notion that somebody says, oh, you're not going to be good working with young people? You know, do you have examples or ways of countering that?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, and it is actually one of those subtle things that an employee, someone who's interviewing you, certainly not going to necessarily come out and say that. But there are ways in your conversations you can point out ways that you have, and you've had mentoring relationships with folks that are younger than you, that you've had such enrichment working and working with them and bringing them along and helping them learn. But you've also learned a lot by working with them in this reverse mentoring idea that, and talk about in any way you can fit in how intergenerational work situations have been a success for you, and mention certain projects where you were working on someone with someone who was younger than you and how you balanced those two mindsets, when it may be that the younger person was getting you up to speed on the technology or a new way of doing things, and you just latched on it, and you said how that opened your eyes to a new way of doing business or whatever. But try to find examples in your own life, and if you're not currently doing that, try to find ways that you can engage with folks who are younger than you to get that you can have proven examples of ways that the partnerships have worked for you. And but a tangent on that, Dori, when we were talking about entrepreneurs briefly earlier, I did a story for the New York Times not all that long ago about this wonderful intergenerational legacy businesses where a younger entrepreneur and an older entrepreneur pair up together to start businesses. And so you've got the experience and perhaps the capital of and the network of an older experienced worker pairing up with a younger, someone in their 20-somethings who, are having trouble in the job market right now as well, often, and you get the enthusiasm and their new approaches of doing business that you might not have thought of. And the synergy has just been incredibly rewarding, and it also creates a business that has legs. It's not a business that's just there for the next 5 or 10 years, but a business that could really run for another 20 or so when you get somebody younger who's part of that team that's going to move on with it. So you have the time to let the business breathe and grow. There's not this panic that it's got to be a home run right off the bat, because anytime we start a business, it's inevitable setbacks. And having that partnership, I've just found there's great examples, and there's a group here in Virginia, the Senior Entrepreneurship Works. org that Elizabeth Eisel, who's just fabulous and has done a lot of work in this area of senior entrepreneurship, and she has identified a lot of these nice partnerships, and I write about a few of them as well. That I love that, and I always encourage people to look to partnering with somebody younger if you're going to start a business.
That's great. Could you give some examples of some of the ones you wrote up?
There's a story of this entrepreneur here in Washington, D.C., who partnered up with his son-in-law. He retired. He was a lawyer with the phone with Verizon. And when he retired, he was a young retiree and wanted to keep rolling, doing something. And they started a distillery. And they are making gin in Washington, D.C. They're one of the few, I think the only distillery in Washington, D.C. And they are just going like gangbusters. It's Green Hat Gin is what it's called. And their distillery is in the city. And they, in their first year of business, they did something like $600,000 in sales. It's because his son-in-law had worked in restaurants in the Washington, D.C. area. He had worked at distributors, at liquor stores and so forth. He understood the community and what sells and what customers are looking for. He brought a lot of savvy. He understood also internet marketing and kind of getting the virtual word out there and how to get people gathered to get excited about a new product. And he's a people person, so he could go out to bars and do tastings and all this sort of thing. And it just got up a head of steam. And they took their time and built it out and took court. They went back to school to learn how to do this. And the senior partner he's a financial guy. So he knows how to do the books, and he's a lawyer too. So get through any regulations and so forth. And so it's been a fun partnership for the two of them. And they each bring their unique skills to it. And they've been very successful to date.
That's a great example. So again, the idea, and I totally agree, and I know Elizabeth has commented too, of how important it is to try some of these different experiences and to work with different people, and there's so many things you can create. But do you really think it's possible that you can make a living and a difference at the same time? Or do some of the examples you're giving are people where it sounds like they're making good money, but for people where it's more of the encore career, do you find that people really can make a living and a difference, or do they have to support themselves with one job and then give back volunteering or something to society in another way?
I honestly believe you can certainly get a paycheck from your passion and giving back. And it's just a matter of finding those opportunities within the nonprofit structure. You may have to start initially. I tell people often who have trouble finding work today, over 50, not to, and if they want to go back and do this sort of work with meaning and social purpose, don't sit at home sending out resumes blindly. Get out and do something. Get out and volunteer for a cause you care about. And you just might find that and I don't mean going in and stuffing on, but go in and find an opportunity where you can really use your skill set to provide a job that they need to have done. And I find so many examples of people who it has grown into a full-time job for them. And it's this time where the nonprofit checks you out, you check them out, you're there. And they see that what you can contribute, that becomes a job that is a paycheck. It may not be as much as you were making in the corporate world as this happens, and it's a reality. So don't go in with this sort of pie-in-the-sky idea that you have this unrealistic income expectation. But there are those things out there. One of my favorite stories that I talk about from What's Next is gentleman Don Covington, who retired from the Navy, but he was young. He was 55. He wanted to keep doing something and stay engaged, and he wanted a paycheck as well. And Don could have, he was a captain and he flew jets and all that sort of thing. And he, when he came out of the Navy, he probably could have gone to work for a defense contractor or flown a commercial aircraft. But Don ran away with the circus. Don loved the circus from the time he was a little kid in Baltimore. And everywhere he was stationed with the Navy, he would find a circus and go to the circus and so forth. But Don, when he got out, he said, I'm going to find a way that I can go and follow the circus. And he took a job at the Big Apple. He was able to get a job at the Big Apple Circus, which is a nonprofit. It gives back in a big way. So I consider his kind of an encore career in that definition, because it's really a, it's a great, and he became the company manager there. And he would travel up and down the East Coast with this group of 150 people or so. And I said to Don, and he said to me, Carrie, the thing is, the circus and the military are not that different. The thing is, and what he meant is, what he was able to use all of those wonderful leadership skills that he had learned in his career in the Navy to manage people, to move people, to be organized, to make this a very smooth operation. He knew how to do operations, and that's what moving the service troop. And so, and his wife was a nurse, and she became the wardrobe manager, and they just had, it was a ball for them. And the fact is, that is a paycheck and a purpose for, because it's working for a nonprofit. Sure, it wasn't a, I don't know exactly what the salary was at the time. It was, he felt like he was making a difference in the world, and that's what really matters. But right. I think there are plenty of opportunities. His is a big story, but there are plenty of them every day that we're seeing.
That's great. That ties into Janet from Indianapolis asks, if, do you think that older corporate American folks who are entering the nonprofit world could help there be increases in salaries given the acknowledgement of the work done?
I think it's all a person-by-person negotiating process, and it really depends on the nonprofit. I think traditionally we have this notion that the salaries have been roughly a third less. I think that's a blanket statement. I think each one is going to have a different opportunity. A nonprofit is always going to be running on a different mission, and they try to keep costs down because they want as much as they have to actually go to the cause that they're catering to and they're caring for. There is that realism that, yeah, I think the salaries, they do respect if you can bring the expertise that they need to make them, make it possible for them to build their coffers bigger. If you can make that correlation between, it's worth being able to pay me more because I'm going to be able to bring in more for you. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? I think it does.
Yeah. And just a comment also from Elizabeth, who says that she totally agrees with what you're saying and use your skill set well. And what she says, and see what you think about this too, Carrie, that she says she believes that Encore workers need to work to negotiate salaries that are sustainable, that too many volunteer, and that doesn't help the younger generations receive livable wages. So staying engaged and receiving a paycheck helps all workers, so that, because now there are four or five generations of people working together.
I love that. I think that's really true. And I think it's also important to, and I'm going to try to find it so I can tell the listeners, there, you need to check if you're looking at for nonprofit work, find out what the salaries are before you get in there. Find out what people are getting paid so you know what negotiating room you might have. The think that it, you can go to places like payscale.com and so forth to get an idea for the for-profit world and probably somewhat for the nonprofit world, but specifically there are ways to get the nonprofit salary information, and that just gives you a bargaining tool there.
Helpful to think about. Lucia, I'm sorry if I pronounced this wrong, but Lucia, wonders if there are organizations that favor hiring people over 50.
Absolutely. And I think that they're a good place to go. And I'm not just shilling for AARP, but I do write for them. But I actually, and their jobs expert or what have you, AARP does a great survey where they look at the best employers for folks over 50. And if you go to the AARP.org website, you can find that list. And their Life Reimagined arm of AARP also has employers who have actually, quote, signed this pledge that they really do focus on hiring more experienced workers. Within those two, you'll find job listings and that are to them. But just through the employers list for best employers, I think you'll be delighted to see some of the companies there. And those might be ones you might want to target. Some of those, interestingly enough, when I scan my eye down the list, are colleges, universities, and healthcare providers. and you'll see some interesting names there. And I do think that there are companies that know that they need to have the experienced worker as part of their team, and they do value it, but it is a company-by-company sort of thing.
Would you be able to share what you've been finding are maybe some of the biggest roadblocks for people who are trying to make a career change or moving into an encore career?
Yeah. I got to tell you, it is as basic as it gets. Money is the biggest stumbling block. Mm-hmm. And we all may dream of making a career change and doing something that we always dreamed of doing, or giving back and working for a nonprofit and something that makes our life, gives us meaning and so forth. But the issue comes down to, can I afford to do this? And it really, it stops people in their tracks, because when you're starting over, particularly if you're starting over in a new career, you're generally going to be starting at a lower salary, at least initially. And if you are starting your own business, which I'm a huge fan of the entrepreneurial world, chances are you might not be able to pay yourself a salary even for the first year or so till you get some traction. You need to have money set aside. Maybe it's from a package that you've gotten from early retirement, but if a lot of people have a partner who is still in the workforce that can help provide that ballast. But what happens is, if you really need to be financially fit, and so where I spoke, I always talk about my fitness program, and we talked a little bit about being physically fit if you're making a career change, and also ageism. But if you are financially fit, most of the people who I interviewed and I've profiled and met with who have been successful are ones that were able ahead of time to downsize their lifestyle in some way to make it more affordable to make that shift. And they, guy I know who was a mortgage banker, he wanted to move into teaching, which is something a lot of people like to do at this stage in life. It's giving back as well. And he wanted to become a social studies teacher in high school. He and his wife really sat down, ran the numbers. They sold the house, they sold their big house. They moved into a smaller condominium, townhouse actually, I think it was. But they were able to use the proceeds from the first house to pay cash. So they don't have a mortgage anymore. They have lower living costs and so forth. So for him, it was really important to cut that down, because there's no way his salary is going to be close to what it was before. So any way you can, a lot of people can't do that depending on your housing market or your situation in life, but if you can down refinance your home or find ways to really do a budget and see, where can I trim the cost? Where can I pay off some credit card debts? And that goes back to, it takes 3 years or so to really make your strategy and your blueprint for success. And one of that is definitely getting financially fit, because one of my favorite line stories is to say that debt is a dream killer. And it really is. And if you can get out of debt before you embark on this new second career or second act in your life, encore career, what have you, you're nimble and you have the opportunities to experiment, to try things that you've never done before. Sometimes you might do a couple of things before you really land on the one that's going to work for you. Don't be afraid to do that. But if you're just doing it for the paycheck, it's going to be awfully hard to do it that way.
Can you elaborate on that a little? Because I know in your more recent article, you mentioned people who actually went to something, did something for 5 or so years, and then did something else. And you just were commenting on that your second act might just be part of the transition.
Yeah, it is. And I'm going to answer that one second. And I just found the thing I wanted to tell the listeners
is
that if you work at a nonprofit or you're interviewing for a job at one, you want to check out the organization's latest online tax filing, which is Form 990, and you can see what its employees and the executives earn. That's important salary negotiation information. So I'm a big believer in doing all your homework first, and payscale.com and salary.com are the other two websites. So the more information you have about what people are getting paid where you're looking, that's going to help you in negotiating a salary going in. And also
great
to know what to expect, whether it's really not there. Now, back to your other question.
Well, before ahead, though, Glassdoor.com?
Glassdoor is another great one. Yeah.
Another one. Elizabeth had mentioned that one.
Yes, and Glassdoor is very good at that. And even you can find out, Facebook even has an opportunity there where I wrote about it for one of my AARP columns. You could probably find it when I did a column about a month ago about job boards and what to look for. And there are a couple of places on on LinkedIn and on Facebook that also can lead you to finding salary information from people who actually work at those companies, and they provide the information anonymously to a certain degree, but it gives you a ballpark range at any rate.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Before you go to the other question that I asked you, Bill from Maine had a question, which sort of, I think, relates a little bit here. Just, does the fact that people who are 65 or older and have Medicare make a positive, negative, or no difference for employers? Or might an employer be interested in an employee who doesn't need benefits or doesn't
definitely would be interested. That's another thing that stops them when we were talking about the ageism stuff. It's right. One of those subtle things is that they worry about health benefits. They worry that they're going to have an older worker that's going to have issues, that they're going to be more expensive to insure perhaps, or will be out missing work because of age-related health issues. Anytime an employer, and that's why the other big thing for older workers is I encourage people to do consulting jobs, get involved with we use the word temporary, but I think of it as always consulting in a way as a professional, because you may not be getting the benefits because you may have them from other situations, and from that, if you're older and don't need the health benefit in the same way, it opens lots more doors for you if they can bring you in just for paying you for your work instead of the benefits. And believe me, I'm a freelancer and I'm over 50 and they're happy to hire me without benefits.
Yeah. Well, that leads into, I'll come back to the other question in a minute, but sure. What are some of the different kind of work arrangements that you see that people could expect or are out there for people 50 and over?
Yeah, I think there are a lot more flex opportunities. There you go in, you helicopter in for a project-based situation. You might be on tap for a couple of days a week sort of thing. The big needs I see, again, this will be something that a small business is usually more open to having someone come in who perhaps can do bookkeeping or that sort of thing, or HR or marketing, but they just can come in once or twice a month to help out with something. They can come in for a week, a month. They can come in for a particular project, but since they don't want to do this, they don't have the money to actually hire a full-time person and do all the benefits, they're open to having a real professional come in, and it's a win for everyone because you keep your resume alive, you keep your skills alive, your networking alive. So if you do want to segue back into a full-time situation, you're in the mix. You're current. Everything is, it presents you in a better way. And again, a job could evolve in that situation. There are a lot of these agencies now coming up. There's one in the Washington area, but there are several if you look around the country, and I can also, if anyone's interested, I can email them some other ones. But one here is Flex Professionals, where they literally look to take older workers, experienced workers, and put them into these sort of situations for good pay, so they match the company with the individual. So it's a temp agency in a way, but it's for professional workers.
I hadn't heard about that, so that's excellent. But I know a lot of temp agencies do exist now. Mary from California has an interesting question, too. She wonders if healthcare reform is making it easier for older workers to get jobs with an employer now that people can get, even if they're not old enough for Medicare, if they're with the Affordable Care Act.
I think what it's starting to do, it's all still a little bit new, the dance, but I think what we're seeing is more people are going to have the flexibility to move off on their own and become consultants and to do their own businesses, whether they're working as a working by contract with an employer or not, and maybe not full-time on their books per se, even if they're working what seems to be. But because the healthcare issue, since it is more portable now, like the 401k did for people, it made it easier. The younger generation is so used to it now, they change jobs much more quickly than we ever did, because that portability allows them to take their retirement savings and move along the road. And now with healthcare, it's a freeing thing because you're not bound, because that's one of the big things why people want a full-time job again, or they want to get into an employer. It's for those health benefits, and it probably is still less expensive if you can be with a corporation who's doing that, but you now have the freedom to access healthcare on your own without the huge price tag that it used to be.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that frees things up as time goes on, as you're suggesting on it. Again, just from Elizabeth, she says the website flexjobs.com for
there you
people
go.
Who might want to look at that.
yeah, and again, yeah, there's some others out there, but that one's the one I really like, those gals who started it, yeah.
Great. back to my other question then, some examples, if you could, some of the stories of people who did a couple of transitions where they had a second act and then ended up moving on to a third. But I just know you have some wonderful stories of people who've been able to repurpose their skills and or develop other skills.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that we all need to be realistic and say, okay, at this age, nothing is forever. When we started off in our initial careers, is, oh, I'm going to do this for 15, 20 years or whatever. Not anymore. You may do a little bit of this for a while and do that for another bit of time. And so I see that when I went back to update and revise the What's Next book, was really fun is going back and seeing what's going on. What's everyone doing? As I mentioned, Tim at La Capella is still doing the restaurant and it's going strong. But a lot of other folks, for example, one woman who took a big jump from California Highway Patrol officer to being a Nashville music agent. She has done okay with that, but she realized that wasn't really enough income for her. So she went and got her certification in being a senior fitness trainer. So she also is a fitness trainer. So she's doing the music, but now she's added something else to her kit to keep the cash flow. Another person I profiled, he did a big jump also. He went from being a sort of a Washington lobbyist contract, like a lawyer, Washington lobbyist, and he wanted to start a cabaret act. That's what he loved, to sing and dance and be satirical and so forth. And so he started this lovely show here in the Washington, D.C. area. But he realized that, hey, the gigs weren't coming quite as quick as he had hoped. And so now he's back to, yes, he's still performing and doing his show, but he's now doing contract lawyering assignments to help balance so for that kind of thing. So it's life happens. I found one woman who had started a business. She built it up. She was successful. And you know what? She sold the business. Someone came in and wanted to buy it. So now she's trying to figure out, what am I going to do next? I'm not sure yet. I'm looking forward to it. Life transitions happen, and it's not. And some people actually that I went back to visit there, they found that it was so stressful starting over in a new career that their marriages broke up. There's some real life lessons to be learned. You need to have your whole family and team needs to be on board with you when you're making these kind of changes, because it can be very hard on everyone when there are setbacks and things don't go as smoothly as you had hoped. I just find that I just encourage to tell people, try it, and if you might do this for a little while and you may shift and do something else. That's the message on that. It was really quite interesting.
Just what you were just saying leads into just another question, which is, how do you help people deal with loss of identity that often people have if they've left one job and they're moving into something that's totally new or unknown? Do you find that happens?
I think you're the real pro in this area, but I think it's so true. You've probably seen that with your clients, is people go into mourning. They grieve their old identity. Yes, they want to start something new. Yes, they want a new beginning, or they need to have a new beginning, but they miss being the top dog. They miss being the person that everyone came to for help. Now they're asking for help, and they're the greenhorn, and it can really rock your world a little bit in a way that you didn't expect. And it's something that you need to be prepared for. And that's where your support team is critical to help keep you centered. You also, I encourage people, it's wooey, keep a gratitude list for things that make your new work special for you, because it might not be the finances at first. It might be that it's slippery slope, but if you can be grateful for the freedom that you've given yourself to try something new, those sorts of things, I encourage as a third piece of that fitness program I talk about, physically and financially fit, spiritually fit is important too. You need to have some sort of center in yourself, a place you can go to step away and deal with these moments when you do grieve your old identity and so forth. And if you have, is it a meditation practice? Could be yoga, tai chi, something where you go. For me, when I make big changes in my life, I love to walk my dog because it just gets me into a zone or whatever. But everyone has some place you can go, and try to find a place in your life where you can have that quiet space to let the tensions of change and the stresses be relieved and give yourself a break.
That's great. Are there other parts of the fitness program? Because you've mentioned now physical fitness,
it's really
financial fitness, spiritual. Okay.
So it's physical, financial, and spiritual. So it's just, and I could elaborate on any of those through, and folks can check out What's Next has that advice in there. But or contact me, what have you. I just love those. If you can get those three ingredients working for you, it's fantastic.
That's terrific. Bill from Maine has another question. he was just wondering if he's volunteering in semi-retirement. He's just hesitant and isn't sure if he should talk or not talk about the volunteer work, because he's concerned that if he says that he's volunteering, that if he's now talking to an employer, that the employer thinks, oh, he volunteered, now he doesn't have to get paid and won't even be thinking about compensation. Do you find that happens at all?
I think there's a great way that you can reframe your volunteering experience. And I always encourage people, if you're doing that because of volunteering, reframe it as a business thing that you're doing, as a skill, if you're working in a nonprofit, you could be a project manager, you could be a fundraiser, you could be lots of different things, even if it's volunteer work. Find that word that works in the corporate world that fits the kind of work you're doing for that nonprofit, because you really are employing your skills that you've used in the for-profit world. So if you can package it that way, raised X amount of money for, these are big ticket things, so it might not be as big as what you're doing, but if there's a way to equate it to the work world, what you're doing as a volunteer, and again, employers want you to tell them stories. They don't want to know exactly what you did. They want to know that you managed to get 300 people to show up at this event or something, or raise so much money for the nonprofit. But those are, again, big ticket things that you would do. But LinkedIn, and everyone needs to, if you're really serious about looking for work and you're over 50, you need to have a LinkedIn profile. And that's really your living resume. And employers look at that. And they have a wonderful section dedicated to volunteering. And they say, from the folks I've talked to who really study those numbers and the results from people on LinkedIn, that employers tell them they really value volunteer work, because it says something about the individual, and it also shows how they're nimble enough to use their skills in other environments.
That's very good. But that sort of ties into this other notion of using LinkedIn, helping people see that you're not too old to do things. What if somebody says to you that they just feel like they're too old to try something new? How do you respond?
Yeah, I just say I absolutely am amazed at anyone, and that people do say that. I'm like, come on, you've got to dig down and figure out what excites you. What that goes to, that soul searching thing. Think about really what gets you, that old expression, gets you out of bed in the morning, because all of us have something. And then find a way to find work that matters to you and to the world, if that's what you're looking for, within that scope. And I think, but when you just mentioned quickly the LinkedIn thing, why that's mm-hmm. another thing when we talk about employers being concerned about your tech skills. If you can show that you've got a LinkedIn profile, that you are involved in discussion groups on LinkedIn to a certain degree, if you've got even a Google, if you have a Google Plus account, if you have a Twitter or any of those Facebook things that show that you've done your homework, you've done a Google research thing on the company. But mostly, even as simple as that LinkedIn profile, it lets them know that you have a social media footprint, that you are not afraid of the technology. And I encourage everyone, and employers today, they do their homework on you. It's not just looking at a paper resume. They look online to see what you do and all those connections that you have. It really does matter. And recruiters, I think it's something like 90% of recruiters are looking on LinkedIn. So it's really important that you're involved there.
That is amazing. Well, one other question, and then we'll pull it together. But since you had mentioned that you really think about people who are starting their own business and entrepreneurs and all, if somebody is starting their own business and aren't totally financially fit and haven't been able to do some of the things you mentioned, do you have suggestions on ways to try to finance a startup?
Oh, that's, again, you have got to, don't do anything rash. You have to do your homework and have done these jobs, all those things I mentioned before. But if you really feel you're ready to get started, but you don't have your own dash of money to tap into to really get off the ground, there are some ways you can go about this. And one that often people turn to, family and friends, and structure it. Don't make it a handout necessarily. Maybe a fellow I know started a bookstore in Hawthorne, New Jersey, read books, and he had been in IT. He went to his family, his siblings, and he borrowed from them. And he has a payment plan for them. It's, I think it's 3% interest. They're all on board with his dream. When he got a little setback at one point, they forgave him so he could push his payments back a little bit more. So this is a real friendly environment, but you do want to make it a business arrangement, because you don't want to ruin family relations. But family and friends are usually a good place to go to start. There are also ways that, and you certainly small business can help, the SBA score and that sort of thing can help you find ways to get government, get into the lending world with an SBA approved loan if they like your business plan and so forth. But you can go to the bank if it's a bank you're familiar with. Banks are not usually as receptive to lending to small business because you may not even need that much money to get started. You might just need a couple $1,000s mm-hmm. really to get going. So those are some ways. There's new things coming along. There's crowdsourcing, which we have heard about, this idea of putting up a, getting a campaign to get strangers to give money to you. But it's not a loan. It's just to help you get started. But there's also crowd lending, which Kiva Zip has started in the U.S., where, you know, people actually in your community lend you money. It's not for, they don't charge interest and you repay it over a period of time. These aren't big loans, but again, they're sources. And if you look, I wrote an article that there's information in the book, What's Next, but I also have a good article that ran. You can search for Carrie Hannon and nextavenue.org. And there's an article I wrote there that outlines several different ways that you could go about looking for financing. But there's a couple of ways. And certainly there are, if you're a woman's owned business or certain, there's all sorts of opportunities there to get grants. If you look and you can search online and find those, or in certain economic development loans, depending on where you live.
Great advice. I don't want to keep you longer. One other just comment from Elizabeth before I wrap it up. She says, and maybe you've had to see this also, Carrie, she says, if you're meeting with a recruiter and haven't looked at their LinkedIn profile, many will cancel the meeting.
So there you have it.
So
you better get on LinkedIn.
Do use your LinkedIn. This has been terrific. Carrie, you're wonderful. I just could have you go on, but I have to
respect about this topic.
I can't tell it all. This has been wonderful. What's one piece of advice you maybe want to leave with our audience today?
I think you just got to believe in yourself. And no one's going to do this for you. Transitions are hard. Change is hard. And just, I think that it's a great adventure we have in front of us, and you just need to figure out how to make it work for you. But at the very heart of it is believing in yourself and having faith in yourself to move forward with your dreams.
That's a wonderful final takeaway. And thank you so much. Thank you for being with us. Thank you, everybody, for being in the call. I know a couple of questions comments have come right at the end. I'm not able to include them now just because I think we have such a fine sort of ending part here. But I just want to thank everybody for being here today. Take care.
Thanks, everyone.
You've been listening to Revolutionize Your Retirement Radio with Dr. Dorian Mintzer. To learn more about the resources mentioned on today's show, listen to past episodes, or download our free retirement transition guide, visit revolutionizeyourretirementradio.com.